You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Barrett. Coming up Monday, the U.S. House Committee investigating the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol is holding a public hearing. We'll bring you live NPR coverage starting Monday before noon, starting at about 11:50. The committee is expected to consider possible criminal referrals and to vote on them. Their final report is expected later in the week. Join us for live NPR coverage of the January 6th hearing Monday, starting at 10 to noon here on Wisconsin Public Radio and online at WPR.org. Now, could the Chinese government be using phones in the U.S. to mine private data or even government secrets? That's one concern raised by lawmakers behind a push to ban the hugely popular social media app, TikTok. Senators passed a bill to ban the app from federal government-owned devices earlier this week. The House has yet to vote on that. Some states have done the same. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you share some of the concerns of lawmakers who are trying to ban TikTok, whether at the government level or in general? Do you use the social media platform? How about your kid or grandkid? Do you pay much attention? Do you worry about its use for data harvesting, for propaganda? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. Dave Schrader is a national security research strategist at UW-Madison, where he focuses on information technology, cybersecurity, and cyber national security issues. He's also research director for the Wisconsin Security Research Consortium. Dave, welcome back to Central Time.
Hey, Rob. Pleasure to be here. Thanks.
I want to start with a listen to U.S. Congressman Mike Gallagher from Wisconsin's 8th District in the northeastern part of the state. He's been advocating for some kind of crackdown on TikTok. Here he is on Fox and Friends.
See, the issue is not just that the CCP via ByteDance, via TikTok, can track your location, can track your keystrokes, can compile a dossier on you, and they're hoovering up tons of data from the United States and all over the world while they don't afford the same data reciprocity to American companies that are operating in China. The issue increasingly is that a lot of young Americans get their news from TikTok, which will allow TikTok to censor news according to the dictates of the Chinese Communist Party.
So you gave a list of concerns about TikTok there. Let's start with what we know about TikTok. It's on charts the sixth or seventh most used social media platform in the world, owned by ByteDance, he mentioned there, which is based in China. How important is that ownership picture to this whole story?
Well, I think that's really the key factor here, because ByteDance, it's not a state-owned enterprise, but in China, no company is truly private. So there is an element of control that the Chinese government can exert over ByteDance, and that flows down into the products that ByteDance operates, and that includes TikTok. So I see this as a real problem, because even if TikTok nominally operates most of the time on the surface as just another social media app that's, looks and acts and feels like the other platforms that people might use, whether it's Instagram or Facebook or Twitter or whatever, the problem is ultimately the ability to influence what is shown or not shown to people via that platform.
Yeah, let's start there. One of the concerns, propaganda, either by commission or omission, putting things in to algorithms, leaving things out of algorithms. What kind of concerns do you have about how the leaders of China might influence what shows up for TikTok users here in the U.S.?
So my concern is twofold. One is, just the general content that is shown to people while using the app. What content are you going to show to an audience, based on how you want them to behave? And I think one of the most stark comparisons is between the TikTok platform that we see in the United States and the similar platform in China, because TikTok itself isn't even available in China. So if you're a Chinese user, you can't access TikTok. You will be using Douyin, the analogous product from ByteDance that's targeted at the Chinese marketplace, which has a whole host of different rules that are implemented on it. The likes of which are, if you're under 14 years old, You can only use the app for 40 minutes a day, and you can't use it after 10 p.m. And you are going to be shown videos that are deemed to have a positive social impact. So the algorithm that controls what you see if you're a young American or European user are going to be much different. And it's they're designed to keep you on the platform, keep you engaged. And we've all seen things like these different challenges, like the milk crate challenge, where people are trying to see how many milk crates they can stack up, and it's almost a joke when people fall off of them and get injured, or various quote unquote challenges at the end of the school year of people doing damage to their schools. I don't think those are things that are you can say, oh well, they just go viral because they're popular. Well, is that the only reason they go viral, or are they going viral because they're pushed and chosen by the platform to go viral? There's two sides of that coin.
Now, that's the kind of propaganda side of things. There's also concerns, specific efforts to ban federal government devices, and in some states, state government devices from having TikTok loaded on them. Is there a national security concern if particular federal devices have this app on them?
Well, the app only has as much permissions or capability as a device is able to give it, as the OS of the device, whether it's iOS or Android, is able to give it. But those permissions are pretty deep. And, so there are real data privacy, data jurisdiction, intelligence collection, surveillance concerns that are attendant with TikTok, because it has access to a lot of data on your device. It has access to your fine location. It has access by default to some of the most subtle details that you're able to get from a mobile device. And some might say, well, that's the same types of permissions that other social apps from Facebook, Google, similar, might have as well. But the difference is that those are U.S. platforms. They're operating under a U.S. legal regime. They are largely focused on advertising and trying to sell you things, whereas TikTok is maybe, again, on the surface you're looking at monetization with ads and things like that, just like any social platform. But there's another layer to it, which is that the Chinese government, whether ByteDance is witting or not, can have access to that data en masse. And so, what it winds up being with an app like that, where you have over a billion routine monthly users, and a lot of them are Americans, and a lot of them might be, government officials or people that the Chinese government is interested in, whether or not is on a government-owned device or not, you have access to that data en masse, and it becomes a mass surveillance and intelligence collection tool as well.
Talking to Dave Schrader from UW-Madison, cybersecurity expert there, looking at calls to ban TikTok from federal and state government devices, and maybe completely in the U.S. You can join in with your thoughts and questions. 800-642-1234 is the number. Tom joins us now in Madison. Tom, hi.
Thank you. Yeah, a question and a comment. The question is, can the people in China, or these forces in China, hack into other platforms and mine data and location and information like they do on TikTok, even though it's not their own thing? And the other comment is, I find it disingenuous for Republicans to be concerned about propaganda when we have people like Ron Johnson posting COVID disinformation on Rumble. He's not allowed on YouTube anymore because this stuff has been debunked like crazy, but you can still go to Fox News, Newsmax, and now Rumble to get information that is obviously propaganda.
Tom, thanks for the call. The first point, could China get this information through other means without TikTok?
So, yes, they can and do, but those require offensive cyber operations on the part of the Chinese military or intelligence services, and they absolutely do get information that way, but it takes more work. If you're installing something voluntarily that is essentially a beachhead on your local device that allows similar types of access to data that they would be interested in, it makes it much easier. And also, when you have that large of an audience that you can broadcast, you know, the narratives that you control to, that becomes an extremely effective information operations tool. To the second point, I would say is that it's interesting that the Chinese government and their own propaganda mouthpieces often use the, hey, look at what the U.S. is doing, or the U.S. does it too, or this isn't any different from, you know, than Facebook or their own politicians or things like that. That itself is a propaganda narrative talking point that the Chinese and Russian propaganda mouthpieces use. Now, that doesn't mean that there may not be elements of truth or other valid discussions to have about those topics. But the key difference when we're talking about a U.S. politician, you know, or a U.S. citizen on U.S. platforms versus a foreign government is just that. You know, we have our own marketplace of ideas that U.S. citizens, U.S. politicians, U.S. candidates operate in. And, you know, the free speech and the battle of ideas, those are all of our own problems. What I have a problem with is foreign governments either overtly or covertly via narrative control on platforms like TikTok inserting themselves into our political process.
Thanks for that call. We're talking to Dave Schrader, National Security Research Strategist at UW-Madison. State and national lawmakers are aiming to ban the social media app TikTok from government devices. Some saying, hey, ban it completely. We're talking about potential threats. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have for our guest? Are you a regular user or viewer of TikTok? What do you think of the idea of banning it or changing its terms of service? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. We continue our talk with UW-Madison's Dave Schrader, National Security Research Strategist. We're talking about a push to ban the social media app TikTok from U.S. government digital devices and beyond. At least some bipartisan support out there for both of those options. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, concerns, questions, maybe your experiences with TikTok. 800-642-1234. Let's go back to your calls now. Isabel is with us in Madison. Isabel, what do you think?
Yeah, it seems like, you know, we hear about countries like China banning social media apps and access for their citizens. And I'm curious how this would differ and if it's going to lead us down a path where we're opening doors to banning other social media apps in this country, and if we're setting a precedent. And maybe there is finer legislation that would ban what we want to ban specifically, but not the actual app.
Interesting. Isabel, thanks for the call. What do you think, Dave?
Yeah, I think that any legislation that may be forthcoming, like the bipartisan legislation that's out there now, does have to be very specific about what it actually is that's being banned. And I think the specific issue here isn't about, you know, TikTok as a platform per se. It is about the fact that there is control that the Chinese government can exert over that platform because of it being a Chinese platform. There have been some proposals about things like data jurisdiction and even having some transparency into the algorithm that have been suggested for instance, TikTok US, you know, the platform that operates in the US and the company that operates TikTok in the US. That those are interesting ideas, and they would all be very complex. And that, you know, there is a point too about banning a platform, setting a precedent. So I think that we do need to be very specific here about things like, we don't want foreign-owned apps to be run on, you know, for instance, government-owned devices in the United States. That's something that's reasonable. As far as preventing the app from operating entirely in the United States, you know, there are any number of technical and other measures that would that could get us there. But I do worry how that would be used, you know, for instance, by adversaries of the United States to, again, highlight, you know, hey, there's hypocrisy here, and maybe give them a justification to be more aggressive in bans or internet controls in their own countries that wind up having a net negative effect.
Isabel, thanks a lot for that call. Dave, do you have an ideal outcome that you'd like to see, whether it's federal law or a negotiation or what, when it comes to TikTok?
Well, my personal view on this is that it's about awareness, and it's not just about TikTok. It's about all of the social platforms, in particular, the platforms that are designed to keep you scrolling indefinitely. That are all looking for ways to, you know, inject that next item in your feed, so that you stay in the app. We all need to be, you know, very aware of the information that we're consuming, where it's coming from, the interests and motivations of, you know, who's showing us that information, as well as, you know, some of the, you know, more technical things like, what kind of permissions are we allowing all these apps to have on our devices? And one easy way of, I think, kind of decoupling ourselves from the addictiveness of these apps is to not use the app at all, but to use the, you know, whatever the site is, whether it's Facebook or Twitter or even TikTok, via the web, and including on your phone. It's more of a pain, and it is, you know, it's not as nice, it's not as good of an experience, but that helps, you know, maybe, you know, you stay in the app less. And I think that, you know, even something like a ban is fraught. There's a lot of problems with, you know, with a blanket ban, but we can make the choice of what apps we use and what apps we allow on our children's devices in our families, and we can help people be aware of what the risks are.
Let's go back to our callers. Rick is on the line in Boscobel. Rick, hi.
Hello. Aren't most cell phones made in China anyway? So wouldn't they be able to trace, bug, and prompt you to watch, listen to, and study you however they want anyway?
So we are able to, so that, you know, that's a good question. You know, a lot of the devices that we use are made in China. And, you know, we're able to inspect these devices at a supply chain level that security researchers, you know, would be able to determine with a good degree of certainty if there were any backdoors or, you know, capabilities like that, and, you know, put in the devices. And frankly, it's much easier to, you know, to spy on a target using other means at the software level than it would be to embed something in hardware at the supply chain. Now, the hardware supply chain argument is an interesting one. And, you know, there have been examples of undetected supply chain vulnerabilities that have been raised. And, you know, one example is with the DJI drones. That's a Chinese drone manufacturer, and it's been very popular even with U.S. government agencies, police departments in the U.S. And we realized that, you know, even if it doesn't have vulnerabilities now, that is a supply chain that's controlled by China. And do we want to be allowing, you know, those exclusive, you know, Chinese-controlled supply chains to be in extremely critical areas? But, you know, the cell phone example is certainly an interesting one. That's why you see manufacturers like Apple looking, part of the reason you see manufacturers like Apple looking to move some of that manufacturing into the U.S.
Thanks a lot for that call. Dave, it seems like the fundamental issue here is we are entwined market-wise with China in so many ways, yet we have this largely adversarial relationship. Can we do both of those things at the same time?
Well, I'm afraid I don't have an answer for that one. I mean, clearly we have a lot of economic interdependence. We have had a lot of efforts at cooperation, over the last five decades. But clearly there is an adversarial and highly competitive relationship that's emerging, and some would call it a new Cold War. And China's interests in many areas do not align with those of the United States and those of Western countries. And so, when we have these dependencies, we need to ask ourselves, what can we do to look out for our own interests in a way that makes sense?
Dave, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you.
That's Dave Schrader, National Security Research Strategist at UW-Madison. We talked to him today about the U.S. Senate recently passing a bill that would ban the social media app TikTok from federal government devices, calls for complete bans from some in Congress on both sides of the aisle, and potential security threats of the app on people's phones in general. Coming up Monday here on Central Time, the January 6th committee wraps up with a final hearing, or expected to be final hearing, and recommendations for next steps. We'll find out what came up in Monday's session. And chatbots, machine learning, and other so-called artificial intelligence programs are able to create text documents that can throw school papers into chaos. Find out what happens when the AI meets the term paper. That's Monday here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, what are the classic recipes you keep making over and over again? On this week's edition of Food Friday, the creator of Smitten Kitchen joins us to share some new classics. First, Milwaukee County is on track to reach record overdose deaths for the fourth year in a row. As of November, numbers the county had reported 449 drug overdose deaths, 124 that were likely overdose-related. The increase can largely be chalked up to fentanyl, a synthetic opioid much more potent than heroin that has flooded drug supplies in the U.S. Milwaukee is not alone. In 2021, the drug killed more than 70,000 Americans. We're checking in now with a group dealing with the problem in Milwaukee. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Has fentanyl affected your life? Have drugs affected you or your loved ones? If you work in addiction treatment or healthcare or law enforcement, how have you seen things change in recent years? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Glenda O. Hampton is the executive director of Gateway to Change, a substance abuse treatment center in Milwaukee. Glenda, welcome to Central Time.
Hello.
And also with us, Desalyn Smith, clinical director and supervisor at Gateway to Change LLC. Desalyn, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Desalyn, you work, I understand, directly with clients there. What have you seen in the last couple of years as fentanyl entered the scene and overdose deaths kept going up?
Yeah, I've seen a rapid increase in admittance in our center, more fear from the clients, and unfortunately, the deaths we've experienced about anywhere, I think about 8 deaths that were clients or recent clients that had just left our treatment center. So it's been devastating. That's devastation is what I've seen.
And Glenda, you've been working in this field for 20 years. What is different about this last few years as you see it?
The difference is basically we don't have enough, let me see, what word am I looking for? We don't have enough, not referral sources, more people that's within the inner city where we could get more help. Because right now it's like we need more help to do what it is we're trying to do.
And Desalyn, let's talk about fentanyl in particular. It's a major reason overdose deaths keep going up. It's showing up in it as itself in fake prescription pills, in heroin, in other drugs. How do you try to spread the word that, hey, these drugs that weren't safe, but that they're less, even less safe than they used to be?
Well, I hit the ground running, and I just want to make a small correction. There, it's not fentanyl overdose. It's fentanyl poisoning. These people that are using these drugs are fentanyl is being put, like you said, they're making fake pills, and even if someone that is addicted, or even some people that are just struggling with pain and they can't get the prescriptions that the doctors prescribe, but inadequately educated them on the harmful effects, side effects, as in addiction, and they go and buy a pill, they're going to buy just what they feel is a Percocet or Oxycontin or something to relieve a pain. They're not going really trying to get high, and definitely not looking to die from a poison that someone just man-made and manufactured into their pills. So I just want it to be, you know, us in the addiction world, in this field, it's not in the parents that have suffered and people that have suffered the loss of loved ones. It's fentanyl poisoning. And I think what we need more of is education to our community, to end stigmas and just get out here and hit the ground running. And that's what I do. And I had to face some of my own fears, some of my own stigmas. And I get out here and I go in the streets. I will go out there. I'm not afraid to get out here. And I relate to the individuals, and I don't make them feel like it's us against them. It's us against us. We're trying to save each other out here.
Glenda, what kind of resources would your organization and others like yours need to help deal with this growing problem?
Sort of like what Desalyn was saying, more education. More education, more outreach resources where they could go and get what it is they need. That way they don't try to get what they need on the streets.
Desalyn, are there things you could point to that would help the person who's currently using drugs, A, help stop them from using them, but also avoid that fentanyl, as you say, poisoning?
Yeah.
Well, what I would just suggest is to reach out to who they trust and start there. And I know a lot of people don't have that, but they're going to have to face a fear, their fear and their guilt, and just go in somewhere, even if it's to a total stranger, and let them know they need the help.
We're talking to Desalyn Smith and Glenda O. Hampton. They are both with the group Gateway to Change, helping people with addiction, helping people avoid this rising number of deaths because of the synthetic opioid fentanyl. If you've encountered this in your own community, wherever you are, you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Glenda, we've got Milwaukee County getting about $70 million from opioid lawsuit settlements. If people asked you, hey, where does this money need to go, what would you tell them?
Where do the money need to go to help? To help the community that's helping those addicted.
And Desalyn, you talked about how devastating this is for the community. How are you doing seeing this firsthand? As you say, talking to people who've lost loved ones, this sounds like a really hard job to be doing.
It's very toll. It takes a toll on you, but I keep my support network together and I talk with them, and when I need to take a break, I take a break, and that's very important to anyone in the field. I don't try to be a hero, but what I do try to do is educate and advocate. I find myself doing more advocating for individuals at this point, but I definitely take advantage of self-care and utilize the support that I have when I feel a burnout coming, because I won't be good to anyone if I'm burnt out.
Deslin, if somebody's listening and they have someone in their family, say, they're worried about, worried that they're using illegal drugs, they might be at risk of encountering fentanyl, what would you tell them?
I would tell them to reach out to their local agencies and let them know, and don't take no for an answer, because we'll get a lot of places that, like what Glenda was saying, they're not, the people aren't really trained well enough to deal with some of these crises. But I would just say, don't take no for an answer. Get the help that you need, but reach out. Just reach out to someone and get the resources that can help you talk to your family member that you feel is struggling, and just be as supportive as possible to let them know that they have a support. No one is judging them, and they just want them to get better.
Let's bring on a caller. Mary is with us in Wauwatosa. Mary, hi.
Hi. I work in addiction as well, and aside from dealing with addicts, I think we need to be educating young people about even experimentation with drugs, because some of these children and young people and other people are dying because they think that they're going to just get high on a pill because they got high on a pill before, and they're purchasing things online or on the street that they think is maybe one Percocet, but it's actually laced with fentanyl. So I think we have to go to a system where we don't just talk about addicts, which is certainly a huge thing, but we also start educating our young people not even to experiment with this stuff because of the dangers. And Mary, that's my comment.
Mary, thanks for the call. Glenda, you were mentioning education and outreach. Are you hoping to reach out, as Mary wants to kids in school?
Usually, Deslin does that.
Right. I actually contract with Mental Health America, and we're in MPS schools, and I actually have a conversation going to recreate the education in the school in MPS, as well as educating the youth and training the staff for Narcan and Narcan boxes, because that is also one of the things that I work with Wisconsin Voices of Recovery on. Is Milwaukee County, as you stated, had the highest rate of overdoses, but we didn't have easy access to Narcan, where other suburban cities and counties in Wisconsin did. So that was, I took that on and worked closely with them, and they are a blessing for Milwaukee County, as when I call and say, hey, we have someone that agrees to get educated on Narcan, as well as have a box installed in their high-risk traffic area business to be able to assist in our community. They come right down, and they're in Madison, and they come right down and we'll install that box. So that effort in education is not just to educate and treat someone that is in recovery. We are trying to educate the entire community, which will start with our children. And I do work in with three schools in MPS, and that's part of our goals, yes. Mary. So I agree with that caller wholeheartedly.
Mary, thanks so much for the call. And Deslin and Glenda, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us, and thanks for the work you do.
Thank
You're
you
welcome.
For having us. Yes, all right. Mm-hmm.
We've been talking to Glenda O. Hampton, CEO and Executive Director of Gateway to Change, LLC. It's a substance abuse treatment center in Milwaukee. And Deslin Smith, Clinical Director and Supervisor at Gateway to Change. They talked to us about the rise of fentanyl and how it's changed the work they do. Coming up, we'll find out how opioid lawsuit settlement money could help deal with the problem in Milwaukee. And you could still join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think could be done to help tackle this fentanyl crisis? Where does money need to go? What are you seeing in your own community? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. We're picking up our conversation about overdose deaths and fentanyl in Milwaukee. Milwaukee County will receive $70 million in opioid settlement funds. That's its share of the $26 billion from a national settlement with pharmaceutical companies for their role in the opioid crisis. Rob Henkin is president of the Wisconsin Policy Forum, which published a report about how Milwaukee County could improve its substance abuse recovery services. Rob, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me, Rob.
Well, we just heard really from the front lines in dealing with fentanyl in Milwaukee there. In your report, what were some of your main recommendations on how Milwaukee County could improve its substance abuse recovery services?
So I think one of the most overriding findings and recommendations with regard to the report was that we have a lot of service when it comes to substance use disorder services. We have a broad continuum of services. We have dozens of community-based agencies that are doing good work. What we don't have is a lot of coordination. We have fragmented service providers who are in their own service lanes, who are doing their own thing, but who are not necessarily as aware as they need to be of what the other providers on the continuum are doing. This can impact the ability to ensure that there are warm handoffs in terms of individuals who are receiving treatment and who are progressing through that continuum of care. We observed gaps in the system, particularly in areas like bridge housing, that really would benefit from more coordination and collaboration. And so I think, you know, the good news is that what we found is that the community is not suffering from a lack of service provision. It is suffering most from a lack of coordination of that service provision.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Danielle is with us in Milwaukee. Danielle, hi.
Hi. First, thank you for covering this topic. I'm a critical care nurse in Milwaukee, and so I take care of an unfortunately large number of patients who have overdosed, and they are either alive or they may be brain dead but alive and are selflessly donating their organs, or their family has chosen to do that. So unfortunately, we see it a lot in critical care. And one of the things that I wanted to point out that I think a lot of people don't realize is that fentanyl is something that can affect anyone and everyone who participates in any recreational drug use. I think a lot of the time we think of addiction when we think of overdose, and not saying that that isn't a huge problem and that I have, you know, the utmost like compassion for that. But I think it's important for everyone to remember that anyone who has a loved one who at any time participates in recreational drug use that may have been at one time considered quote unquote safe, it's not safe anymore. And so I just wanted to make that point.
Danielle, thank you so much for sharing that. And Rob, this is something I'm trying to wrap my head around. Obviously, people who are dealing with addiction are at higher risk just because they are more likely to encounter fentanyl. You don't have to be addicted. It could be your first drug experience and you encounter fentanyl. How can Milwaukee deal with that? Not just that population of people with addiction, but the risk to everybody.
Yeah, so both you and the caller make an excellent point. And so a couple ways I respond, and let me emphasize, I am not a clinician, so I'm the last person in the world who can comment on clinical approaches here. But we spent a lot of time in our analysis looking at prevention and education. And I think clearly there is a need to increase the level of awareness of this danger that so-called recreational drugs like marijuana, cocaine isn't necessarily deemed a recreational drug, but drugs that are not considered to be as addictive are increasingly laced with fentanyl and can be very deadly. And while that is certainly a wide area of understanding in the treatment community, it is not perhaps among the general public. So just the need to and the opportunity to potentially use some of these dollars that are going to be coming in to Milwaukee County government to increase prevention and education efforts there. I think another overriding thing that we heard that was echoed by the caller is that justifiably, we have seen so much emphasis on opioids and increasingly on fentanyl, but in many respects, alcohol, cannabis, and cocaine are still far more prevalent. And now, whereas the severity of using those substances is not nearly as great in many cases as it is with opioids because of the injection of fentanyl into marijuana and cocaine, these are now deadly drugs, and so, or more so than they were before. So clearly a need to make those connections came out in our research.
Danielle, thanks for that call. Rob, let's connect the dots here. Now, you mentioned there are a lot of services out there in a place like Milwaukee, not enough coordination. How could, for example, this opioid settlement money help fix that, help connect these groups and combine those services as you were talking about?
So this is an area where for the Wisconsin Policy Forum, we think a lot about government structure and the role of government. And so we think that there's a really good opportunity here. Milwaukee County has made a big shift in terms of its overall behavioral health service provision from being a direct provider of service to being an administrator of services on the mental health side, and to also start to move toward being a coordinator of services and an entity that is sort of setting the bar for service provision within the community in terms of quality standards, et cetera. And we think there's that same opportunity on the substance use disorder side for county government to potentially use some of these opioid settlement dollars to develop an information technology infrastructure that could have real-time information where there is residential treatment bed capacity and bridge housing capacity, and again, capacity among the various points of the service spectrum, which is a particular challenge for local hospitals as they are looking to discharge people from immediate detoxification services and hopefully get them into longer-term treatment, but often not knowing which providers are out there with capacity. So having the county play that role, and that would take some investment in staff and in information technology. In terms of having the county serve as more of a coordinator and a convener of the various types of service providers to ensure, again, that there is greater coordination there.
In our last couple of minutes, the opioid problem has hit different communities at different times. Right now, it seems like pandemic and beyond, the increase in overdoses hitting Black communities more and more. How is that showing up in Milwaukee County in just our last minute and a half or so? How can those disparities be tackled?
Yep. There's no question that as with so many things, unfortunately, in our community, we are seeing bigger effects on lower income populations in Milwaukee and people of color in Milwaukee. And so I know your previous guests spoke to this. You know, one of the challenges here is we have a county government that serves both the city of Milwaukee and its suburbs that is in charge of substance use disorder services. I think that doing more teamwork with public health departments, which are the municipal agencies in the city of Milwaukee, as well as suburban departments, and specifically trying to target the most vulnerable communities with public education and prevention activities is again something that potentially county government could spearhead. But I also think investing in things like bricks and mortar, making sure that there is bed capacity within the communities where that capacity is needed most.
Rob, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
That's Rob Henkin, president of the Wisconsin Policy Forum. He talked to us about the Policy Forum's report, Road to Recovery, about how Milwaukee County can improve substance abuse recovery services amid the overdose problem, rising numbers of overdose deaths related to the drug fentanyl. Earlier, we talked to two members of the group Gateway to Change about their efforts to provide substance abuse treatment and keep people away from fentanyl. Coming up after the news, the creator of Smitten Kitchen shares some of her new classic recipes in this week's edition of Food Friday, and we want to hear from you about the recipes that have become classics in your own kitchen. You can let us know over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network.